So we're into item number 24, agenda item 24, commercial fish receiving ticket rules, general restructuring and expansion of electronic reporting. This is a briefing and public hearing, not a decision. Deputy Chief.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. So we'll start off with a little bit of background. What is a fish ticket? So fish shellfish receiving tickets are documents that are completed by both the harvester and the licensed fish buyer or the receiver. And the department can't be present every time that catch is delivered or it's received. So fish receiving tickets are actually sworn documents. They require signatures from both parties certifying that the information contained in the document is true and accurate. And falsifying a fish receiving ticket can constitute a Class C felony. There's presently two vehicles for reporting harvest information via fish receiving tickets, paper and electronic. The paper tickets are required for all fisheries except for where we require the electronic system. And the buyer is the only person that's allowed to possess these documents or access the electronic system. The tickets are very important to us. They're very important to the gentleman to my left, who I failed to introduce because I was in a hurry and I didn't want Tammy breathing down my neck, Mr. Corey Niles, as a fisheries manager. He relies on them to monitor and control harvests. And, of course, law enforcement relies on them to reinforce or enforce a host of regulations, including time area, catch limits, et cetera. So when we go into the seafood marketplace, we can work backwards through a series of documentation that is required at each level, even at the retail level, trace it all the way back to the original landing, and if it doesn't tie to a fish receiving ticket, then it's likely that that delivery was illegal. Making me nervous, Tammy. There's lots of reasons to not document catch as required. About a decade ago, we investigated a case where fish tickets were falsified to hide income so that a fisherman could avoid meeting his child support obligations. So we investigated it, and we stumbled into a bigger problem when we served the search warrants in that case. There were two different species of rockfish contained in totes sitting on the dock. They were known, their common name, brownies and greenies. And we were told that the paper ticket was at the fish dealer's home with his wife. My job at the time was to get there and get my hands on that fish ticket before he got a cell phone call, or she got a cell phone call, and they started to change the original record. So somehow I pulled it off while the officers kept a very nervous fish buyer busy. And to make a long story short, on paper, the fish at the dock had changed color, falsely reflecting that the brownies and the toad on the dock were actually greenies. And after making the deal with the buyer to make that initial delivery of brownies disappear because he would be over his limit, the delivering vessel was back out fishing and catching brownies, or also known as widow rockfish, an overfished species at the time. We ultimately discovered 350,000 pounds of undocumented groundfish. They were undocumented in order to exceed quotas and trip limits, and it included overfished canary rockfish, to the extent that the underreported amount equaled what was necessary to cover bycatch needs for all West Coast fisheries at that time. Pretty significant. The scheme wasn't all that complicated. They put a piece of cardboard in between the carbon copies, right underneath the state copy, which is the top copy. They falsified the state copy, and then they were kind enough to accurately reflect what they actually received on the dealer's copy, which they retained. So when we discovered that second set of books, our case was essentially made. So the only thing that's changed since then is that I'm no longer surprised at how easy it is to make fishery resource withdrawals without documenting it, which means we're potentially managing our fisheries resource accounts without an accurate statement that tells us what our beginning balance is. So there's lots. The paper system's easily abused. Officers, you know, they've walked into fish dealing businesses, some licensed, some not, and discovered 1,000 unsubmitted fish receiving tickets or $100,000 in unreported gooey duck, where the document was initiated but it was never submitted to the agency. There's real current cases involving harvests our fisheries managers aren't aware of. Practically not a week goes by where we're not involved in some sort of catch accounting scheme. One factor is that even if the record is created to get by the initial inspection, should it occur, we rely on the CEVR to actually submit the catch documents in the mail. So if we don't get them, the gentleman next to me isn't aware of the harvest. But that's not the only shortcoming, and I hate to be completely negative here, but while you need a license to get the fish tickets, sharing these documents is as easy as handing them to another person to cover illegal catch. Changing the harvest story is as easy as creating a new record. Making sure that there's no breadcrumb trail for either managers or myself to follow is as easy as losing the original document. Paper documents also don't lend themselves to changing mandatory data fields to meet a new need. There's a cost of changing forms. There's a cost of reproducing copies. It was a 7-year process to get a shellfish receiving ticket for Treaty Indian shellfish harvests. They were scratching out Treaty Indian finfish tickets, scratching out Chinook and writing in gooey duck and crab and the shellfish species that there's a treaty right to harvest. So through the assistance of people like Michelle Culver seated behind me, we got a new document for that purpose, but it was painful getting there. So there are some advantages to an electronic system. I'm not sitting here pretending like this electronic system creates some kind of catch accounting utopia for us. It does tighten things up, though. Information via an electronic system provides real-time information for all of us. Instead of having to wait for the paperwork to catch up to managers or law enforcement, we can look at information on the spot. There's too many examples where we invest a lot of energy in criminal investigations only to find out that we didn't have any criminal intent involved. Somebody was just sloppy in the process and didn't submit their paperwork on time. And we wasted time, and they were alarmed at our intrusion. So instead of facing challenges with document control, the initial harvest story, it's locked into cyberspace with an electronic system. Law enforcement and managers can also detect anomalies more readily, whether that's, you know, some trend in harvest from a management perspective or in criminal behavior. So it opens windows of opportunity to take some immediate action, particularly where over-harvest is discovered. So there's three components of rulemaking here before you. Does three things. Mandates the use of electronic fish tickets beyond the coastal groundfish trawl fishery where it's currently used. But it's not full implementation. It allows for the use in additional fisheries on a voluntary basis through an agreement. And it streamlines, in my view, a very old and cobbled together chapter.
Thanks, Mike. What you see here on the screen now is a screenshot of the system we currently use. It's called ETIX. It's a web-based system. It's provided free of charge to buyers. It was designed and is administered by the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission. Dave Kopel, some of you may know, is the leading force there. Dave and his team designed the system to accommodate all of our fish ticket types from the get-go, but so far we've just used it for ground fish. Next here, and I'm going to go quickly through these next two slides, is just a graph of how many electronic fish tickets we've received by year. You can see I'm going to skip the background here, but we started in 2011, expanded it in 2017, and then doubled what we had seen the first 6 years of the program. So that was encouraging until you look at maybe the next graph here, and same data plotted, but I added the paper tickets on here now, and so you can't even see the blip the increase in electronic fish ticketing reporting in 2017. We get 80 to 100,000 paper fish tickets a year, and in 2017 we hit the 1% mark for electronic. So there was a lot of room to grow here. On this slide, we're giving you some thoughts about how we approached the rule changes. If you look at the current regulations now, we have separate sections, one for electronic fish tickets and paper fish tickets. Putting our heads together, we decided that was unnecessary and redundant. So the aim here is to apply all the core requirements to both paper and electronic tickets. They're really just two ways of submitting the same information. And then we call out differences where needed. There are some different processes involved with electronic versus paper. The new WAC section 220.352.035 is kind of the centerpiece of the framework. It establishes three categories of fish tickets: mandatory electronic, voluntary electronic, and paper. The idea is that to add mandatory fisheries to the mandatory category, it would require amending the rules like we're asking you to do with this rulemaking. Voluntary is a non-regulatory, and I'll get to that in a sec. And I'm going to skip that last bullet there for the sake of time here, but I'm happy to answer questions about it. So what we're asking you all for as part of this rulemaking is to expand a very minor expansion of the mandatory category to those fisheries you see listed on the slide. We thought we got these with our 2007 expansion, but over the course of last year, we realized these were missed. The commercial halibut fishery there is probably the main target. It's a derby fishery. It happens 2 days a year. So a timely reporting from electronic fish tickets and added enforcement ability would be very beneficial in that fishery. And the other ones are really just for simplicity's sake of if you land ground fish or halibut into the state from most fisheries, we'd like to see it on electronic fish ticket. So who would this expansion affect? Well, looking at the last 5 years of data, we found 9 to 11 businesses, that depends on which year you're looking at, that haven't used the ETIC system yet and would be captured by this rule. What would it cost them? Again, ETIX is free, and if the business already has internet, computer, printer, etc., then there would be no equipment cost. It would just be the time needed to set up and train on it. There are still businesses out there that don't have those things, and so if they're caught here, they would need to purchase or find access to a computer and internet and printer. And our best estimate is they could get set up for around $1,000 to $2,000, if not cheaper. And last thought here is we're looking at the data. The number of tickets we're talking about is pretty small with this expansion, and so there is a chance these businesses would, if it's convenient for them, might choose to not even buy these species versus participating in electronic reporting. But we didn't receive any feedback like that, which I will get to in a sec. So as for this, what I think is the main attraction of this rulemaking is the voluntary piece of it. As it says here, we're proposing giving us authority to use an opt-in, opt-out approach to work with those fisheries and those buyers that are ready to use electronic fish tickets. For example, on the coast, we have people that are using ETICs now for ground fish, but they buy other things like Dungeness crab and pink shrimp or albacore tuna, and we're anticipating some of those businesses will sign up and want to use the electronic reporting for other fisheries. And I know other people around the state, our Puget Sound shellfish folks you just heard from, are looking maybe to have a pilot project here. So, there is some excitement about this. And why voluntary? It's, long story short, I don't think everyone is ready to go mandatory yet. Even if they were, I don't know if our IT people or our Pacific states could keep up with us. So this voluntary program will let us experiment and roll it out in a manageable way. And now I'm going to give it back to Mike here.
Hey, Corey, on the surface, the package, excuse me, in front of you probably looks like we went hog wild. The reason it's so large is because we're trying to support the present model, expand mandatory electronic fish tickets while retaining the paper system and also allowing for voluntary participation. So representing two vehicles for accounting for catch resulted in a lot of paper. But the basic obligations remain the same. When you report fish, how you report fish, but we've got two different systems available, delivery systems. So Mr. Niles went over the major provisions, such as mandatory and voluntary use, but other changes include the addition of a field that requires buyers to indicate place or port of delivery on the tickets, removes the fax number, tightens Puget Sound crab reporting to speed up harvest information we need for in-season management, and it better leverages transportation tickets as a tool to account for fish. The Attorney General's office suggested a different approach. It gets us to the same place in terms of the mechanics of how obligations are reflected in the law. So repeating my favorite phrase, it is unlawful, under each provision just wasn't necessary. So there's a lot of cleanup, a lot of redundancy that went away, given that the chapter hadn't fully been reformed. It was a little tricky because we didn't want to lose something important. There are a lot of terms that are critical, and by tweaking those, you change a lot of other things. So we better define some terms, like what do we mean by immediately, which is the trigger for when you're supposed to complete a fish receiving ticket. Immediately after lunch, immediately after what? So a lot of work went into that.
Yeah, thank you. And in terms of how we reached out on this, per the usual practice, we sent a letter to everyone who we thought might be affected by these rule changes. And that was, in this case, anyone who had a license to fish for, deliver, or receive fish in the state. We looked back, we didn't look just at this year, but the previous 3 years as well, and that came up with, to be precise, I think it was 3,370 different persons. So we sent that letter out. The deadline for written comments was yesterday. We got a number of questions, but only two comments, really. One was, hey, I'm starting a business, and I would like to use electronic if I'm successful, and the other one was, I'm okay with the suggestions that your suggestions for mandatory reporting now, but if you go to other fisheries in my fishery in the future, we'd be a little bit concerned, nervous. So, no opposition. We're curious to hear if anyone is here in person to provide us feedback, and we'll be all ears if there are people here.
Home stretch. This particular case is out of the other coast, but it's illustrative of just how much damage can occur if systems, fish management, law enforcement presence isn't either robust or effective enough. Carlos Rafael bragged that his fishing empire was worth even more than official records show. His trick was pretty simple. When he caught fish that were subject to strict limits like gray sole or cod, he just called them something else, something that was less restrictive. And the scheme that he was sentenced for exploited a number of holes in regulations, a number of holes in processes. He owned 40 boats as well as a fish processing plant. Ultimately, his quota skirting through the falsifying of catch reports put an entire community out of business. There were a lot of people that relied on the business of fishing, and the condition of the town of New Bedford became critical. There's a lot of good people were put out of work. Because what happened next was NOAA banned groundfish fishing in the sector his fleet operated through to the next season. We have our share of local examples. We've recently charged a felony case involving $1.5 million in stolen marine resources that were undocumented. And when it was discovered, it put the fishery over the total allowable catch. In my view, one of the best, normally if you ask me how we could best ensure conservation, I would say, well, hire more fish and wildlife police officers. Well, today I'm going to tell you, implement more broadly an electronic catch accounting system so that that's the system that currently exists can be replaced with something that's less porous, and we can get down the road, hopefully, to fuller implementation down in the future. I want to take just a quick second to thank Corey Niles, Jesse Dorpinghouse, and Captain Dan Chadwick, Joe Pinesco, Scott Bird, and Michelle Culver behind me for their efforts to improve our very important catch accounting chapter. Corey and Jesse in particular made significant investments to get us where we are right here. You only have to look at this package to see how many rules were affected. I mean, there was the risk of going blind was significant. And my hat's off, because I've been complaining for a long time that we needed to fix this stuff, and they rose to the challenge. So thank you, Corey.
Thanks, Mike. And before I get the timeline here, thank you for the thanks. We did spend many hours doing this, but I think the thought that popped in my head was earlier today was if we could name regulations like we can name laws, like after people like the Magnuson-Stevens Act, this should be named after Mike. We spent hours on this, but he spent decades making it happen, and I can't even put into words how much we admire him and the culture he has for the for the fish ticket accountability. We're very appreciative. So on that timeline, you're here. That was your briefing, and if this public hearing will follow. In terms of adoption, our recommendation was we want to get this in place this summer, where there's still at least half of the fish tickets coming in. And so if there was no significant comment and a request for changes, we were thinking that your May 4th conference call would be appropriate for adoption. But if there are some changes and requests coming, then our recommendation would be maybe the June meeting would be more appropriate. And again, June, July is when we have the 30 days after adoption and looking to get it in place for some of the summer fishing. A couple quick other notes. I see Commissioner Carpenter's not here today, but that the text in the box in blue over there was in reference to a blue sheet he made, of a request he made for us for information about electronic reporting and recreational fisheries. So Mike and I were asked to put this on here to let you all know that will be coming in June with a briefing there on recreational electronic accounting. And then lastly, kind of exciting to me is, and to Mike, our coastal crab folks have expressed interest already in maybe going mandatory for electronic reporting for next season. I think of a couple meetings that happened a week or two earlier, they might be here asking you for that now, but the timing didn't quite work. But I know Michelle Culver and Heather Reed and others are ready to get going as soon as we're we're done here, and we'll be running a process of outreach and working with the industry pretty quickly, it looks like. So that's pretty exciting to hear, and I think that's it, and we're happy. Mike's happy to answer questions.
Can we go back to slide 9, the graph that shows the count of paper and electronic tickets? There's been quite a drop, it looks like, since 2014 that hasn't, in the paper reporting, that hasn't been made up in the electronic. So we've had a drop in sales, or...
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for the question. I had the same question myself. I asked our fish ticket guru, Marjorie Morningstar, what happened, and she gave me an answer. And I have to say, I can't remember the details. But I think part of it's a backlog of getting paper tickets in, and a new process we have with tribal fish tickets and some kind of certification process, which I'm unfamiliar with. So I'm not sure how far back in time that goes. Part of that is it might be a backlog, but it might be. It might be a drop in the number of activity. But also, like, in the groundfish, we saw a drop in activity, but that meant it was kind of a process of rationalization in the fishery where people are slowing down, and so there might be fewer trips, but the same amount or even more fish. So it's number of tickets doesn't really always equate to the amount of fish landed.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Gotcha. Mr. Chairman, just a couple of comments on how important this is. You know, everybody wants the commercial fisheries to be managed in a sustainable manner, and everybody wants to have the confidence that the right number of fish are being caught, and that does come down to counting the fish. And so this is a very important improvement. A lot of work has gone into this, but it does end up leaving us with the confidence that the fish are being counted better around the coast, other states, and up around the country. This is an improvement that's going to occur. When a business has to be connected to the internet and have a computer, I'm not sure if there's businesses out there now that don't already have their own website and aren't already connected to the internet. So I think it's doable. The electronic fish tickets is the way of the future. And these two gentlemen here are very active in the Pacific Council process, and they've referred to one of the hardest working people in the entire Pacific Council arena, Michelle Culver in the back there, who have spent a lot of time on this improvement, and it's a genuine, valuable improvement.
Okay. And there was, oh, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just looking at the summary sheet, and you're looking to do three things, right? Expand the voluntary program, expand mandatory electronic reporting, and then clean up the WAC. But my question is right now, let's say, for example, a salmon buyer in Puget Sound wanted to take advantage of the e-ticket reporting system, they can, right? Or is that not available currently?
He could through an agreement with the agency, yes. But those agreements haven't been developed yet.
Okay.
What you would be doing is putting the framework in place for us to go forward and have more discussion with the other fisheries managers and the other sectors to do what makes sense next.
I see. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
It's clear, if you pass this, then yes. What Mike said is they're forced to use paper by regulation, so they can't use e-ticks under our current regulations.
I see. Okay, I thought this. So that's a clarification for me. I thought that this was already available and people weren't taking advantage of it. But there's work that needs to be done within the agency to reach out. Okay. Well, that answers my question then on the next, or actually on that slide. It's like, you know, most businesses, as you say, and some of these salmon buyers in Puget Sound are sophisticated businesses. So I'm kind of surprised that they're faxing in, you know, the fish ticket information. So, but that's good. I think I agree. I think this is a good thing that we should modernize and stay up with the times. And it allows our managers to quickly determine whether there's more fish available for harvest or whether it's time to close. So this is a great thing. I fully support it.
There was there's no public input.